У этого визита есть несколько...
This visit has several important components. Syria survived a devastating earthquake with many victims. Syria needs economic help and assistance. Syria has problems with energy prices, which have risen. As an important ally of Russia, it will receive this assistance. The second component is no less important. A meeting of representatives of Iran, Turkey and Russia at the level of deputy ministers of foreign affairs is to be held in Moscow, where a potential unfreezing of relations between Damascus and Ankara will be discussed. The very fact of such negotiations in Moscow already speaks of a positive trend.
The situation in Syria and bilateral military cooperation were discussed by the defense ministers of the two countries. Sergei Shoigu, in a conversation with his counterpart Ali Mahmoud Abbas, expressed condolences to the Syrian people in connection with the February earthquake and stressed the importance of close contacts, which are aimed at maintaining stability in the Arab country in the field of defense and the fight against terrorism.
The visit by the Syrian president is indicative of strengthening ties between the two countries. The Syrian-Turkish dossier is another important outcome of this visit. The near future will show whether this will lead to the restoration of ties between Syria and Turkey. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
Out of classrooms and hospitals and onto the streets, tens of thousands of the nearly half a million striking public sector workers yet again calling for better pay and conditions. The biggest number striking over 2 days this week, teachers, 300,000 of them.
Schools are in crisis because of a lack of funding. There is not enough money going into the schools. It's not just about the pay for the teachers and for the support staff. It's about the basics in the schools.
This is the second time this year teachers walk off the job.
As part of the long-running wave of industrial action that has swept the United Kingdom in the past few months, today it's kicked up a notch in a momentous day of walkouts to coincide with the announcement of the budget by the country's finance minister in Parliament just down the street from here.
Among other things, Finance Minister Jeremy Hunt promised $115 billion in cost of living support for families. Ahead of the walkout, the teaching unions were asked by the government to call off their strike in return for formal talks. The unions said that was a precondition they wouldn't accept.
There's already enough barriers to us taking strike action. It's really hard to actually get a mandate to take strike action. We will talk if a decent offer is put on the table.
A decent offer is yet to be made, and in the battle of hearts and minds, striking workers are still winning, with health workers and teachers enjoying the most support. Primary school teacher Chris says the government has some political choices to make.
Teachers don't want to strike. I want to be in school. I want to be with my class today. So I certainly hope there won't be strikes, but there may be more strikes if the two sides can't make an agreement.
Cost of living protests and walkouts in the UK have been going on for months now, with strike fatigue nowhere in sight. Syed Purizza, London.
Several days ahead of the holy month of Ramadan, Kabul residents flocked to the city center to purchase food and necessities for fasting. Afghan markets usually witness a spike in food prices before Ramadan, but this year the situation is much more challenging. Many Afghan families are running short of food amid deepening inflation, unemployment, famine, and poverty.
Ramadan is a blessed month, and Muslims do their best to make full and special preparations. Unfortunately, this year, people are facing an economic decline with little purchasing power. They need rice, flour, oil, beans, egg, and dairy, but many will have to rely on a piece of bread and water this Ramadan.
I was employed only 4 months out of this entire year. I didn't have an income for 8 months. Today, I came to the city center to buy some food items in preparation for fasting the month of Ramadan. But as I saw the prices, I felt like I can't afford anything. The prices have skyrocketed and our cash has less value than before. I think this Ramadan will be the hardest.
This is the second Ramadan since the Taliban took power in August last year, following the catastrophic withdrawal of the U.S. The country's heavily aid-dependent economy, mostly funded by international donors, has been in chaos since the Western countries suspended humanitarian aid and froze Afghan assets.
We used to have an aid-dependent economy. After the political change, it started to crumble as the Western countries cut their aid. Furthermore, economic sanctions and banking restrictions were imposed on Afghanistan. This resulted in people losing their jobs and many factories and small businesses shutting down. In my opinion, the West is committing a crime against humanity in Afghanistan, pushing millions to starvation and death.
According to the United Nations Response Plan, in 2023, two-thirds of the Afghan population need humanitarian assistance. That's a record number of 28.3 million people. This will require funding of $4.6 billion, making it the highest humanitarian requirement in the world. Ramadan is a month of celebration, unity, and compassion. But people in Afghanistan will mark the holy month under the shadow of multiple crises. They are awaiting solidarity and support from the international community. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
A scandal involving a Quran desecration at a school in northern England has continued to escalate, despite the resolution of the affair by the local community. With a local mosque and its imam facing a sustained onslaught by right-wingers in the press and government too. Hafez Mohammed Mateen Anwar played a prominent role in easing tensions after news spread across the community of a Quran desecration by students at Kettlethorpe High School in Wakefield. When the news went viral, talk of an alleged death threat and a street protest erupted. Mateen Anwar offered up his mosque to the school and police as a location for a community meeting, an opportunity to clear the air, lay out the facts, and end the matter once and for all.
So behind me is the local mosque where the meeting took place. Now, as far as the local Muslim community are concerned, the situation was dealt with amicably and ended on good terms, with communication playing a big part in making the difference. However, it seems as if the government and also certain right-wing elements within mainstream media appear to be deeply unhappy with the way the story played out.
The meeting successfully resolved the affair, with police, the school head teacher and one of the students' mothers all in attendance. But instead of celebrating the peaceful conclusion, the British press ran with inflammatory interpretations of the story.
The police acted, recorded it as a non-crime hate incident, and the boys were, the four pupils were suspended. So that shows that we now have de facto blasphemy laws in the UK.
The mosque is now under investigation by a charity watchdog, while Mateen Anwar has been accused of stoking the row. He is also being portrayed as an extremist over Islamic views he's expressed in the past. Press TV spoke with the embattled imam, who blasted the media for peddling misinformation, such as forcing the mother of a student to attend and apologise.
What's the purpose of that meeting? The purpose of that meeting, Robert, was to let the community know that what you're seeing on social media, these lies, they're not true. Out of those students, one of their mothers, in fact, contacted our team on her own accord and explained how she felt, and she in fact herself invited our team to her home address by her own choice. The mother attended the mosque and wanted to sort of relate to the community about how she felt. A number of points were addressed on that meeting, which then led to a really amicable conclusion to this. There's a number of statements I've come across, statements from ministers, statement from the education minister himself, and a number of other political figures, people of media background, who have sadly just followed onto this tangent of lies and continue to progress that further without actually trying to investigate the truth, which is sad. It's really a sad reality that they've not actually investigated what went about. We were successful, Robert, in stopping a demonstration which could have led to further incidents. We were responsible for the reinstation of the children back into the school.
The imam added he's exploring legal options to challenge what he says is an Islamophobic smear campaign against him by right-wing elements who are deeply unhappy with British Muslims successfully standing up for their faith. Robert Carter, Wakefield.
People in the Gaza Strip rallied in front of the Red Cross office on Monday to mark this year's Palestinian Wounded Persons Day. The annual event pays tribute to Palestinians who have got injured during Israeli wars and aggressions. Thousands of injured Palestinians suffer from permanent disabilities caused by Israel. Wounded Palestinians say Israel's crimes will continue to go unpunished as long as the regime is under the protection of Western countries.
Our injuries always remind us of the criminal Zionist enemy who left us scarred for life. The Israeli crimes against the Palestinian people started in 1948 and continue to take place until this day. The world, especially the Western countries, must stop assisting the Israeli regime.
During the 2014 war on Gaza, Israeli forces killed over 2,200 Gazans, including women and children, and injured more than 11,000. In May of 2021, over 2,200 Palestinians were injured, including 685 children and 480 women. The wounded people in Gaza are also suffering from the Israeli blockade, which has created a harsh humanitarian situation in the region.
Gaza Strip, during the last years, witnessed different escalation, which caused so many wounded people who are suffering due to their injuries, severe injuries, and in the same time, the socio-economic conditions due to the blockade.
Wounded Palestinians in the blockaded territory struggled to cope with their injuries due to a lack of specialized medical facilities to cater for their needs.
We are calling on the international community in order to exert the pressure on Israel, first to stop its offensive on the Palestinian people, and also to end this illegal blockade, to let in the medical instruments and equipments and medicine to Gaza Strip in order to help these people who are in bad need for surgeries and medical treatments.
Medics say Israel's use of unconventional weapons during its wars and aggressions has increased the number of severe injuries among Palestinians.
Israeli regime forces have killed and maimed thousands of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, including women and children, since 2008. Experts say the international community must end its apathy to Israeli crimes. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
A comprehensive cooperation roadmap aimed at expanding bilateral relations and 7 MOUs to boost trade and cooperation in transportation, agricultural, and cultural fields. The result of Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko's two-day visit to Tehran, celebrating three decades of close ties between Iran and Belarus.
The visit can be considered a turning point in our bilateral relations. It's an opportunity to share our experiences. We have made remarkable progress despite the sanctions, and we have turned threats into opportunities. We are ready to share our experiences with our friend Belarus.
We're both on the same page. We both agree that a multipolar world is emerging. Iran has made great achievements despite Western sanctions and has turned into an important player in the region and the international arena. There's a lot that we can do together.
The high-level talks between the two sides also included a pledge to increase trade volume to $100 million per year.
Both countries are determined to improve their relations and trade. The economic relations between Iran and Belarus are not comparable to the past.
This is the third visit ever to Tehran by a Belarusian president and the first in 17 years.
Belarus and Iran enjoy strong relations, which is reflected in frequent high-level meetings and various agreements. Belarusian officials have described Iran as a strong partner for their country in the region and in the world. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
A leading critic of Israeli aggression against Palestinians, David Miller, who was sacked from his professorship at the University of Bristol in 2021 after a sustained campaign by Britain's Israel lobby targeting him, has addressed a group of Iranian students at the IRIB University in Tehran. He said Western spy agencies in association with the Western media outlets are to be blamed for unrests and riots in various countries, including Syria.
And MI6 also played a key role in the creation of the Free Syria Army and what was termed in British propaganda terms the moderate armed opposition in Syria. And the most shocking thing, I think, is the involvement in the managed massacre of captives in order to present evidence of chemical weapons attacks by the Syrian government.
Moreover, Miller said that the recent unrests, which erupted in some parts of Iran following the death of a young woman, were orchestrated in advance by the United States and the Israeli regime.
The hybrid war strategy against Iran, against so many other enemy states, is led by the United States via a myriad of assets and outlets. One of the key elements is what might be called the small media strategy. U.S. funds are channeled directly and indirectly to a variety of independent media and citizen journalism or media defense organizations.
Miller, who is also the producer of Palestine Declassified show on Press TV, has repeatedly come under attack by Israeli lobbies in the UK for supporting Palestine and revealing the true face of Israeli regime and its Western allies.
Although David Miller has been sacked from university and has been repeatedly pressured by Israeli lobbies, and there are efforts underway to undermine and smear his name and reputation, he believes such attacks will simply strengthen his resolve to continue the fight. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
Creating a world where untold stories are told and unheard voices are heard. The annual IRIB World Service News Awards, dubbed SOAP Media Festival, this year had a lot to celebrate.
It's been a few years that the dynamics are changing and the new world order is emerging. The unipolar world is now turning into a multipolar world. Iran is in a position where it can speed up this process and offer a third viewpoint different from the two narratives that have always existed.
Words that clarify the mission of IRIB World Service. And this is exactly why the Arabic news channel Al Alam swept the IRIB World Service News Awards, taking home wins in nearly every major category, with its sister channel Al Alam Syria TV maintaining front-runner status with its popular talk show Zoom Room.
We are proud to be able to gain a strong foothold in Syria and West Asia in particular by shedding light on the truth and covering stories that are untold about people who have been misrepresented.
I've been with Al Alam for more than 8 years now. I have hosted many TV programs. It's great to be part of a team where the goal is to bring truth to light.
Meanwhile, the Spanish-language news channel Hispan TV, as well as Press TV, were seen as the gold standard of achievement in the television community, winning awards in different sections, including the Best Documentary and the Best News Website. Not to mention that Press TV's Palestine Declassified won the Best Political TV Show.
This is the moment we're in. We're in the end, the dying throes of US hegemony. And as he was saying, I very much agree with, the cultural infrastructure for the ending of hegemony has to be put in place, and that involves media, including news and journalism, which can give a different view on how the world is operating and tell more of the truth about the world. So, you know, the media play a central, important role in all that.
Press TV correspondent Johnny Miller, who has covered the most difficult news stories, including the Rohingya crisis and the developments in Ukraine over the past year, was not left out.
I think two of my heroes, Noam Chomsky and John Pilger, said that they've never seen as much propaganda in the war in Ukraine than in any war that they've reported on or written about, and they've reported right back from Vietnam. So that's telling you a lot. And there's a huge amount of propaganda on Ukraine. Indeed, Ukraine is it's a civil war, but it's also a proxy war between Russia and NATO. And I think we're seeing the beginning of this split between the West and the East, China, Russia, Iran, and we're seeing a challenge to American hegemony and indeed the creation of this new multipolar world.
And according to the head of the Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting, IRIB World Service is at the forefront of this propaganda war.
In this unequal war, where IRIB World Service has none of the advantages of mainstream media, from state-of-the-art technology to political support, it has been able to blaze a new trail. The fact that its news channels are frequently banned on different social media platforms is testimony to that. Meanwhile, this also proves in practice that the free flow of information and free speech are nothing more than slogans that are used as political tools by advocates of democracy.
Media play a key role in today's world. They can set the tone for diplomatic endeavors, and they are a tool of international communication. Particularly for the Islamic Republic of Iran, its media outlet can pave the way for diplomacy.
That is why there are great expectations, which means that so far, IRIB World Service has been able to deliver on its responsibilities.
In a world where mainstream media is setting the narrative, IRIB World Service has been able to break the monopoly and offer a new perspective. Gisumi Shahmadi, Tehran.
In the limelight.
Ron DeSantis says the United States should not get further entangled in the Ukraine war. The Florida governor's remarks align with Donald Trump's view and are likely to shift sentiment in the Republican Party away from supporting Ukraine. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who is widely expected to seek the GOP presidential nomination in 2024, said on Monday that continued support from the United States for Ukraine as it defends itself in the war against Russia is not a vital national interest for the United States. While DeSantis has previously criticized what he called a blank check policy for U.S. aid to Ukraine, this is his most direct and expansive answer on the issue yet. The Florida governor's stance puts him in line with former President Donald Trump and at odds with other top Republicans and potential 2024 candidates who have shown ardent support for Ukraine. While the United States has many vital national interests, securing our borders, addressing the crisis of readiness within our military, achieving energy security and independence, and checking the economic, cultural, and military power of the Chinese Communist Party, becoming further entangled in a territorial dispute between Ukraine and Russia is not one of them, Ron DeSantis said in a statement to Fox News Channel host Tucker Carlson. Tucker Carlson sent six questions to potential GOP presidential candidates about the war in Ukraine. Donald Trump, Ron DeSantis, former Vice President Mike Pence, biotechnology entrepreneur Vivek Ramaswamy, South Dakota Governor Chrissy Noem, Texas Governor Greg Abbott, South Carolina Senator Tim Scott, and former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie answered the questionnaire. Several, including former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu, did not respond to the questionnaire, and former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley released her answers publicly on Tuesday, 14th of March. Donald Trump told Tucker Carlson that opposing Russia in Ukraine is in Europe's strategic interest, but not for the United States. He also repeated his claim that Russian President Vladimir Putin would not have started a war with Ukraine if he was president. When asked if there's a limit to funding and material that he'd send to Ukraine, Donald Trump said, "It would strongly depend on my meeting with President Putin and Russia." Donald Trump also called for European countries to boost their support and said he would tell Ukraine that there will be little more money coming from us unless Russia continues to prosecute the war. In an interview with Fox News Channel host Sean Hannity on his radio show last week, Donald Trump said he would have negotiated a deal for Russia to take over certain areas of Ukraine. Ron DeSantis, widely seen as Donald Trump's chief rival in the race for the Republican Party's presidential nomination, and their positions on the U.S. policy towards Ukraine reflect a shift among some Republicans who oppose additional assistance to Ukraine. Nikki Haley took note of the similarity between Ron DeSantis and the former President Donald Trump on the question of Ukraine, and suggested Trump is right when he says Governor DeSantis is just copying him. "I have a different style than President Trump, and while I agree with him on most policies, I do not on this one. Republicans deserve a choice, not an echo," she said in her answer. Other prospective GOP presidential candidates have called on President Biden to do more to help Ukraine in the war with Russia, exposing a rift within the Republican Party ahead of the next election. Former Vice President Mike Pence said last month that the United States and its allies need to accelerate the pace of military provisions for Ukraine until it defeats Russia. The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered this story and tells us more. Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis, the two top Republicans in polling regarding the 2024 presidential nomination, have said defending Ukraine was not a vital US interest, in remarks that will demoralize Kiev and encourage President Putin to believe that time is on his side. Donald Trump, a long-standing Putin admirer, has been consistently skeptical about US support for Ukraine and has suggested he could broker a peace deal involving Ukraine surrendering territory to Russia. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis had previously tried to dodge questions on Ukraine, and his new comments are likely to shift sentiment in the Republican Party further from support of Ukraine. Both men answered a questionnaire from Tucker Carlson, the primetime Fox News Channel host, who posted the responses on Twitter. Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, said the United States should not become further entangled in the Russia-Ukraine war. Donald Trump, the former president, who dominates polling, said the Ukraine war was not a vital U.S. interest, but it is for Europe. "That is why Europe should be paying far more than we are, or at least equal to us." The remarks come at a time of military stalemate, while neither side proving able to make significant breakthroughs on the battlefield. Ukraine is hoping to break the impasse this spring, but it is unclear whether it has enough weapons and experienced soldiers to achieve this aim. Analysts have said that the longer the war continues, the better President Putin's chances, as Kiev's Western backers get weary of the cost of the war, and Russia's greater population becomes an increasingly important factor. To the questionnaire of Tucker Carlson, Ron DeSantis said, "While the US has many vital national interests, securing our borders, addressing the crisis of readiness within our military, achieving energy security and energy independence, and checking the economic, cultural, and military power of the Chinese Communist Party, becoming further entangled in a territorial dispute between Ukraine and Russia is not a vital US interest." Ron DeSantis also accused Joe Biden of providing a virtual blank check to Ukraine and said, Without question, peace should be the objective. The United States should not provide assistance that could require the deployment of American troops or enable Ukraine to engage in offensive operations beyond its borders. President Joe Biden has said U.S. troops will not be deployed and has not encouraged Kiev to go beyond attempting to expel the Russians from its territory. F-16s and long-range missiles should be off the table, Ron DeSantis said. These moves would risk explicitly drawing the United States closer to a hot war between the world's two largest nuclear powers. That risk is unacceptable. The Florida governor also said a policy of regime change in Russia, no doubt popular among the D.C. foreign policy interventionists, would greatly increase the stakes of the conflict, making the use of nuclear weapons more likely. Apart from an off-the-cuff Biden remark a year ago saying that Putin cannot remain in power, the Biden administration has been adamant it is not pursuing regime change in Russia. In his response to Tucker Carlson, Donald Trump claimed, "Russia would definitely not have raided and attacked Ukraine if I was U.S. president."
Option for today and a better tomorrow. IRIB English Radio. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Sound from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
And welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Now, the Israeli regime has been creating terror for more than 70 years now. The regime was founded on terrorist attacks, murder, and the displacement of Palestinians, both Christian and Muslim. Between 1947 and 1949, around 750,000 Palestinians out of 1.9 million were thrown out of their country. And since that time, Palestinians have witnessed many massacres and more death and destruction, which still continues today. Sunday, there were three more Palestinians killed, as this year may set a record for the number of Palestinians murdered by the regime. All of this has happened as the so-called international community looks the other way. Well, I'd like to welcome my guest, who's going to help me look at all of this on the Spotlight. Ken Stone, Executive Committee Member, Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War, and Executive Committee Member, Syria Support Movement. And Sandas al-Assad, Lebanese journalist out of Beirut. Thank you both for being with us. Let me start this off in Ontario. Ken, though the Israeli regime has always been extreme, why do we see its behavior reflecting what appears to be a whole different level of impunity right now?
I think the whole new level of impunity can be attributed to several things. In the first place, I think that Israel has witnessed in the last several months that its war, it's part in the U.S. regime change war on Syria, which started in March 2011, is failing, and it's failing badly. And so they are, I think, desperate to do what they can to prevent Syria from getting back on its feet and rejoining the world community. So the reason for those Israeli attacks on Syria, those pinprick attacks, are to try and hamper Syria from reconstruction, and it's partly to goad Syria into opening up a second front against Israel rather than focusing on the occupations of the Syrian territory by the U.S. in the eastern third of Syria and by Al-Qaeda affiliates in the northwest corner of Syria, in Idlib province, and of course the Turkish incursion along the complete northern border of Syria. So they're trying to distract, the Israelis are trying to distract the Syrians with these pinprick attacks. And they are getting more and more desperate because I think the their imperial masters are also getting more desperate. And by imperial master, I mean the empire, the U.S. government, which is responsible for the regime change war on Syria, has signaled by sending U.S. General Mark Milley to an illegal U.S. military base in eastern Syria last week, that the U.S. intends to fight on to control the petroleum and wheat resources of Syria. And at the same time, the U.S. government in the House of Representatives reaffirmed that they would keep their sanctions on Syria despite the earthquake. And they turned down Congressman Getz's attempt to have the U.S. withdraw its troops from Syria. So all these things indicate a heightening of tension.
Okay, well, what about that, Sundas? You heard what Ken said about the desperation. Do you agree that there's a desperation, not only Tel Aviv, but Washington also? Give me your take on that.
Exactly true. First of all, salam. Thank you for having me. We have recently, since the failure of the 2006 war against Lebanon, and then the tries to evoke sectarian skirmishes here in West Asia, especially in Lebanon, in Syria, in Iraq, followed by the aggression against Syria and the aggression against Yemen, also the suppression of the popular uprisings in Bahrain, in eastern Hejaz. We have seen this imperialist upset because all their trials, all their attempts have been have failed to make the people of the region to make them force them into submission. The people of the region truly believe in their cause, truly believe in their just cause, their righteous. Cause that this land is theirs, especially the Palestinians. Mm-hmm. We know that 2 years ago, the Persian Gulf repressive monarchs openly declared their previously established relations with the occupation entity. So suddenly we see this, the failure. How this agreement with the Zionists, which is between quotations called normalization. I don't believe in the naming normalization, but these ties that has been declared with the enemy have proven that they are complete failure. That the only way to deal with this apartheid regime is resistance, because this regime is occupying lands for an indigenous nation that includes both Muslims and Christians. They have looted their resources. They have attacked the peoples of the region, whether in Lebanon, in Syria, in Iraq, in Yemen, Also, they have intervened in the affairs of the Iranian people. So we have seen nothing but failures of this Senatic vicious scheme, which Condoleezza Rice called the birth of a new Middle East in 2006 war, because those people have the right, because those people are not, because this land is ours, this land, this occupation is odd to our land, to our geography, to our demography. So the failure of the West has tried in different ways to force the people of the region to submit and surrender, but the only option of the people of the region is to expel this illegitimate entity from this region.
Okay. Well, Ken, do you think that Israel is imploding because not just the deterioration, deteriorating situation with the Palestinians themselves, but also from Israeli Jews who are dissatisfied with the current government and have been protesting for 10 weeks now? Is this added pressure on this regime right now?
Indeed, it is. I think 250,000 people were in the streets of Tel Aviv yesterday,
right,
complaining about, demonstrating about the proposed changes to the Israeli Supreme Court that are being undertaken by Netanyahu, even in defiance of the Israeli president, Herzog. I think there's a huge conflict in Israel right now over what their democracy, and I put this in quotation marks because it's a democracy only for Jews living in citizens who will live in the 1948 boundaries. It's a dictatorship, a military dictatorship for the people, and an occupation for the people in Gaza and in the West Bank. But the people who live in Israel proper are really upset because they see that even their democracy is being undermined, and the nature of the state may change. Religious parties may end up with undue influence, and a lot of people are upset about that. At the same time, hundreds upon hundreds of Israeli officers have refused duty and quit their posts. So we can see that there is a lot of chaos going on within the state of Israel. And that's a further reason, by the way, that the Israeli government unleashes these attacks on Palestinians in Gaza, in the West Bank, and attacks Israel. It's always been good business, good PR for the Israeli government to be seen bombing Arabs and killing Arabs. It sells at home, and it makes the government popular to their bases. It's a sickening thing, but it's true.
Is the Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to the Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Stay with you, Ken, because you just said something interesting, that's the very popular when basically Israel bomb Arabs. So when we see the mass numbers of people turning out in Tel Aviv, those same people who are complaining about this extremist government, would they be the same ones that would support this extremist government if there is more a direct conflict, like more bombing of Syria or other countries. These same individuals who claim to be against extremism, do you think that they would actually support, continue to support Tel Aviv?
Regrettably, I don't think that the people who are demonstrating in the streets sympathize necessarily with the plight of the Palestinian people mm-hmm. or the people mm-hmm. of Yemen or the people of Syria. Right. I think that this is a domestic issue for them. And they, as Gideon Levy, an Israeli journalist, said, when he went out to these demonstrations, they had not a word to say about the Palestinians living under occupation.
Okay. All right. Well, Sandas, what does that say to you about all of those, or the majority of those who are living in this country, on the one hand, trying to show that they have democracy and they're against this, what they're calling an extremist government, but on the other hand, they are also living on usurped land and supporting this regime? Your analysis.
Exactly. Sister, let us remember what Sayyid Nasrallah said in the year 2000, directly on the day of the liberation. He described the Zionist entity, the Zionist enemy, which for long had been described as the army that can be defeated, or the army of the elites. He described it that it's weaker than the web of the spider, than a spider's web. Mm-hmm. Because those settlers who are living, who are occupying Palestinians, have been brought by the British colonization and by the French colonizers from different parts of the world. They have nothing in common, and this is just. This is a simple justification that those has no right in Palestine. They come from different backgrounds. They come from different countries. They don't belong to this land, and they have nothing in harmony. They have nothing in harmony with each other. Yes, they need democracy. They claim that they are suppressed by their own government. And on the contrary, they approve killing the Palestinians, targeting the Syrians, the Lebanese, and creating havoc in the region. And this is a clear evidence that this entity will not. I believe that this entity, as also Sayyid Nasrallah has described it, it's a temporary entity, and I don't think that it will last more than a decade now, because all the details that are provided so far proves that this regime is collapsing. This regime is weaker, and this message must be understood by the monarchs in the region who are normalizing ties with this weak entity. How can this weak entity help you protect your thrones when itself is a weak and vulnerable and will not last? Mm-hmm. So your steps of normalization and your moves will not help you if you complete suppressing your people and your complete ties or building these dreams with this enemy.
Okay. Well, Ken, Israeli terrorism has been involved with destabilization from its creation. Not only does it oppress the natives of the land, the Palestinians, but it also creates havoc in neighboring countries and beyond by committing various types of assassinations and terrorism. So what needs to be done to stop this? We see that basically, mum is the word in dealing with the so-called international community. So what needs to happen in your perspective, Ken, to change this around?
I think people in the Western countries of Europe and North America have to pressure their governments to stop enabling Israeli war crimes against the Palestinians and against neighboring countries. Without this enabling at the United Nations, and without the arms, and without the funding that's sent every year to prop up the Israeli regime, it would not last very long. And in Canada, we have a very good example of it. We have been pushing the Canadian government for a long time to end the charitable status of Israeli organizations in Canada, which funnel hundreds of millions of dollars out of Canada every year. With a stroke of the paper, a pen, the Canadian government could end that. It could end the free trade relationship with a stroke of the pen with Israel. It could end the security arrangement with a stroke of the pen. The European Union could end the special status that Israel has as a non-member of the EU. It gives it preferential status. All these things are levers that the governments in the West could use to put pressure on Israel, and it's up to the people in the West to push their governments into putting some penalties on the Israelis for their intransigence.
Well, Sundas, with the various type of terrorist act that the Israeli regime commits against various groups, do you think that in actuality it is actually strengthening and uniting resistance groups and their resilience against the regime?
Exactly, that's what's happening. The more the Israelis commit crimes, the more the atrocities are committed by this regime, the more the resistance fronts are getting united and are getting more close to their goal, that we can't live in this region without fighting this enemy. And here I must mention something, that this this occupation, this apartheid regime, doesn't only impose that on West Asia or the people of the world. It imposes a clear and a serious threat to the entire world, because its war crimes, its terrorism will affect the entire world, because you know that this regime that doesn't care about that has no ethics, has no values. It's part of the great empire. It's part from the great imperialist scheme that tries hard to loot all the resources and the lands of the region. So this regime has failed in many ways in reaching its goals, because the resistance people are getting more aware, and this what Imam Khomeini said in the beginning of the Islamic Revolution, that he said that kill us, our people will get more aware. Yes, our people are getting more aware and are getting more conscious about their cause and about the nature of this apartheid regime that has no values, is apartheid regime that is occupying the rent and creating many killing the people of the region.